Robert Stajan Studio, we're listening to music by Pink Martini from their Sympathique CD. Today we talk about the ongoing process of updating and changing Shakespeare to better reflect the times we're living in. We'll be talking with three artistic directors about their summer Shakespeare offerings, Asai Dean of Salt and Sage Productions, Paul Susie of Portland Actors Ensemble, and Jennifer Lanier of Original Practice Shakespeare Festival, OpsFest. So stay with us for this look at changing Shakespeare on Stage and Studio. I'm Dee Mae Roberts, Stage and Studio. With me live in the KBOO studio are Asai Dean of Salt and Sage Productions. Welcome.
Welcome. Thanks.
And Paul Susie of Portland Actors Ensemble. Welcome.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
It's great to have you back on Stage and Studio. It's been like a decade for both of you, so welcome back. I don't know what the heck happened there. Now, you're both artistic directors of your companies, and you've been working on some projects with diverse casts this summer. Is that a great way to spend your summer, Paul? Because you're newly artistic director, right?
That's right. Yeah. Yes, I just took over from Michael Godsey in January of this year.
He did that forever,
He did it for a long time. PAE knows how to hold on to the artistic directors. It is a wonderful way to spend the summer. It's highly stressful. This is our 49th consecutive season. Bringing free classical theater to Portland. And so to focus specifically on diversity and inclusivity is a real privilege and a real honor. And I think that has always been an undercurrent of PAE for all those years, by bringing in audiences who had never seen theater before and working with a lot of first-time actors over the years. And now to put that front and center feels like the right thing to do.
Are you the first POC artistic director of
probably,
Portland Actors Ensemble?
Probably. This is Portland.
Because I've been here for
all.
A long time, so
yeah.
I think you may very well be.
Yeah, it's true. I just met Howard Thorson for the first time, the guy who founded PAE in 1970, and he was saying that the mission originally was that he was an acting teacher, and he just wanted his students to perform, and so it was a natural extension of his class. And so it feels like by being grounded in that, like, welcome to this cultural resource sort of stance, sort of mission, diversity and equity feels like the natural extension of it.
Well, Oregon Shakespeare Festival started off with a teacher and students
exactly.
and the community members, so you never know
that's
how
right.
long that's going to last. And Asai Dean, this is a company you started, right? Salt and Sage
yes.
Productions?
Yeah.
Is it a great way to spend your summer? Because I think you do one every summer, don't you?
We do. It's a fantastic way to spend the summer. Yeah. No, I mean,
I only laugh because the whole stress thing, you know, everybody says, you know, it's fun to do theater, but it is also very stressful.
Yeah, it's a ton of work. I mean, Salt and Sage, like sometimes people ask where the name came from. And the name for me really connects to what I like about theater and what I feel like theatrical work should feel like, which is I think it should be that it should feel like you are stretching your body, your mind, your soul. And so it should be a little sweaty. It should be a little salty. There should be some tears.
Oh, is that where the Salt and Sage came from?
Yeah, yeah. So theater should make you sweat. And it's certainly been making us sweat this summer.
Well, it is a good name because, you know, you could also sell like Salt and Sage Botanicals
oh, yes.
or something.
Yes.
You know?
No, people are always like, it sounds a little hippy dippy or like you're
oh,
trying
no,
to sell something.
No.
And I'm like, well, maybe.
And there's nothing
we
wrong
could
with
go
that,
there.
There's nothing wrong with hippy dippy. So so I was just curious from a personal angle, what was your first experiences with Shakespeare? Do you guys remember? I mean, for me, it was like Romeo and Juliet in eighth grade, doing it in English class, right?
Yeah.
So you guys have any thoughts about your very first experience with Shakespeare? Go
ahead.
Yeah, sure, I'll take it.
Yeah.
I think, so what's amazing is I don't think my first experience with Shakespeare was the stage. Like, I remember the first show I saw, but I think my actual first encounter with Shakespeare was my dad read to me every night as a child, and he wanted to expose me to things that might be way over my head, but would still sort of you know, just let me know like the world of literature that was out there. So he read me passages from As You Like It when I was like a little one. And that's my first experience of Shakespeare, was hearing my dad read, you know, the All the World's a Stage speech and like Rosalind.
Oh, that's lovely.
Yeah. It was a great way to be introduced.
I was a very angry young man, very angry student. And I spent a lot of time in Powell's skipping school. And
this is like high school?
Yeah, high school and also middle school.
And you grew up here then?
Born and raised in Portland. Yeah, I'm one of like five left in the city, I think.
Oh no, my husband's one too. So. there are quite a few, more than you think.
And the Shakespeare section at Powell's really saved my life. Reading Shakespeare, just sitting right at the in the orange room. Back then it was in the orange room and it smelled terrible, and it was a wonderful, wonderful place to spend time. And then in high school, I had a crush on a girl and we did scenes from Richard III, and it was delightful, and yeah, we fell in love. It was great.
Oh, well, that's so romantic. Yeah, yeah. It kind of fits along with your show about love stories, right? So maybe you could use that for a story sometime. I love that. Well, you know, that's very sweet, Paul, and you know, and I just wanted to you know, sort of segue into Romeo and Juliet from having done, you know, I mean, Richard III isn't the most romantic.
I might have chosen
Romeo and Juliet. But yeah, still, you know, you just finished a production at Lone Fir Acres.
Lone Fir Cemetery. Yeah.
And so, you know, I thought it was very interesting how that show was cast. You want to talk a little bit about that?
Oh, yeah. Erica Terpening, who has been on your show before, is a wonderful, wonderful director. She's based in Western Massachusetts now, but she placed a priority on a diverse cast and a cast that was age appropriate to the roles. So we had a lot of first-time actors. This is their first experience with professional theater, as it were. And we also had a lot of veteran actors, actors who are known and loved in the Portland community. And the alchemy of the Lone Fir Cemetery is unmistakable, where, like, you know, doing Romeo and Juliet in a cemetery is kind of magical. You can't build that kind of a set anywhere. And it was really challenging to train the vocal technique and to train the intentionality around the text. But Romeo and Juliet is a wonderful play to just fall in love with the poetry with. And so I think for a lot of those young performers, and for a lot of us who've done the play like a half dozen times now, it was a wonderful way to reevaluate and reinvent a lot of these speeches that we've seen a million times.
It seemed like half the cast were POC.
That's right. They
didn't do an actual headcount. It seemed like that.
Just about. Yeah. And a lot of the folks of color had prominent roles that felt like it was a reinterpretation of some stereotypical, like I played Friar Lawrence, and it felt like a reinterpretation of what those power dynamics should look like on stage. And Romeo was a person of color as well, yeah.
And you didn't feel like you needed to explain like families that were mixed race or anything?
No.
Yeah. I don't think you need to.
Yeah.
Because that's what we're living in now, right? Well, what were the challenges of performing free Shakespeare, especially, you know, in an open location like that, especially during these times?
Yes, you know? Yeah. So in my other life, I'm also a homeless shelter manager for Transition Projects, and the population that we serve overlaps, like the Venn diagram between free Shakespeare and the homeless community in Portland overlaps significantly, and everyone deserves to participate in this culture and have a seat at the table. And we've had some really hot days, and now these days is the mad blood stirring.
Yeah.
And I've noticed just anecdotally that the fentanyl and the methamphetamines are so cheap now that we've had some very substance-affected individuals come through our audiences and pose some significant challenges for the safety of our performers and for the safety of our audiences. And at the same time, we want to be true to welcoming everybody, regardless of who they are.
Well, it's free Shakespeare, and it should be free Shakespeare for all.
Exactly.
Right?
Yeah. So it's a very fine line between wanting people to be safe and comfortable and also wanting to be real, that this is the community we live in. We're not going to sanitize it. We're not going to post security guards at a gate or ask people to pay $60 a ticket. We're just going to say, as long as you can be responsible and respectful, you're welcome. And if you can't, then we'll ask you politely to leave. But we're not going to hogtie somebody and throw them out the gate. Like,
Yeah, well, these are challenging times even for indoor Shakespeare or indoor, you know, productions, because things like that, you know, can happen because these are difficult times. Portland Actors Ensemble is not doing complete works of Shakespeare, which is a total opposite of Romeo and Juliet, which is a comedic romp to condense Shakespeare into 90-minute show.
That's right.
Which is hilarious. I've seen it in the past. And you know, you want to tell us a little bit about that?
Yes.
Because it covers a lot of different plays.
Absolutely. Yeah. Sam Dinkiewicz is directing, and that is about to go on tour to the Vineyards this coming weekend, actually, and then we'll return Labor Day weekend at Reed College. And it is meant to be an irreverent and very, very physical, very, very out of control condensation of all of the works of Shakespeare, and poking fun at the pretentiousness of that, and yet finding some emotional truth, even as we're all laughing our butts off.
It's usually performed by all guys.
That's right.
But you've got two women in the show, right?
Two women in the show, yes.
And a cast of three.
Right.
I just wanted to say.
Exactly, and we're not shying away from, you know, it's a dated script. It was written in the early 90s, and there are some jokes in there, and there are some takes on misogyny in there that are very dated. And so we're being very transparent about, like, well, that joke doesn't work anymore. How can we continue with this show?
Yeah. I think that's all good. So it's updating and changing, even, you know, works that are about Shakespeare.
Exactly.
Portland Actors Ensemble presents the complete works of Shakespeare, which tours through Labor Day at various parks in Portland. And you can visit portlandactors.org for the complete schedule. I also have that stageandstudio.org and kbu.fm/stageandstudio. You're listening to Stage and Studio. I'm DeMay Roberts with my guests, Paul Susie of Portland Actors Ensemble, Asai Dean of Salt and Sage Productions, and Jennifer Lenier of Original Practice Shakespeare Festival will be joining us shortly by phone. And if you missed any of the show, you can hear the podcast later today at stageandstudio.org or kbu.fm/stageandstudio. Asai, you are the Artistic Director of Salt and Sage Productions, and I'm wondering, how did you start this? Did you start this company?
I did, yeah. When I came back to Portland after graduate school, I started directing just some projects that were self-produced, just as a way to get material on its feet, and material I was really passionate about. So I did a production of How I Learned to Drive, and then I did another production of Fool for Love with an actress who, Jenny Newbery, who I really collaborated well with, and she and I decided to form this company because we noticed that Portland, you know, it's... you know, Portland touts itself as a progressive city, but there isn't really, or there wasn't really, a company that was focusing on female experience as, like, a core piece of its mission. Like,
also not as many, especially at the time, even now, female and POC artistic directors in Portland. Let's just say that. So Salt and Sage is doing an evening of scenes from Shakespeare's greatest love stories. What love stories are you featuring?
We are featuring Romeo and Juliet, Troilus and Cressida, and Antony and Cleopatra. So the three love stories he wrote where the, you know, main lovers are in the titles. This is actually a workshop, so a way to explore these free texts in preparation for a repertory project for next year. It's so much text and such a new way of working for many people that we wanted to... Heath Wynn is my co-AD on this project, and we wanted to give it a good period of innovation and discovery and working through, you know, longer form table work than I can traditionally do in a shorter rehearsal process. So this is the culmination of all that labor, these scenes, and it's fantastic to watch, you know, the way Juliet and the way Cressida and the way Cleopatra all... experience love from, you know, their different places of development and their different statuses in society. I mean, Cleopatra has so much power. She's a queen, whereas, you know, Cressida is the most marginalized of the free women. You know, she's in a war-torn society. And
Trojan War.
Yeah. So it's been just really fascinating to, with the same actors, explore this one dynamic in all these different frames.
And it is a very diverse coupling.
Yes.
You know, so we've got, you know, lots of different mixtures throughout in these three scenes. And what is your thematic through line? Don't you hate that question?
you know, I am an utter romantic. So, you know, as cheesy as it might sound, it is, it really is love, and love as like a force that can't save us but can keep us going. And you know, and so long as we connect with one another in a way that, kind of going back to what Paul was saying about the audience in terms of like a way that is respectful, that it can carry us through some of the darkest moments.
Here, here.
And we are in some dark moments right now. Yeah, such times. But good, good to focus on something positive too, you know. The Lovers Project runs through August 1st and August 2nd at 7:30 p.m. at the Shout House Theater, and that's located at 210 Southeast Madison, Suite 11 in Portland. For tickets, you can visit saltandsageproductions.com, and you can also find that info at stageandstudio.org and kboo.fm/stageandstudio. I'm talking with Asai Dean. I'm Demi Roberts, talking with Asai Dean of Salt and Sage Productions and Paul Susie of Portland Actors Ensemble. Joining us via phone, waiting in the wings right now, is Jennifer Lanier of Original Practice Shakespeare Festival, otherwise known as the Ops Fest. Jennifer, hello.
Hi. How are you?
Good. How are you?
Oh, I'm fabulous today.
Okay. It's good to hear your voice. Now, I wanted you to, you know, you are also, how long have you been the artistic director of OpsFest?
Well, I'm actually a co-artistic director. The founding artistic director, Brian Saville Allard, has been with the company for 10 years, its whole existence. And this is my second year with the company, actually.
Well, that's wonderful. So let's do a little info about OpsFest in general. It has its own brand of free Shakespeare performances. You want to describe that to the audience?
Absolutely. When we talk about original practice Shakespeare, what we're talking about is essentially kind of making what's old new again. We are using some of the same techniques that they did in Shakespeare's time. We use limited rehearsal, which means we really only rehearse our fights, our songs, and our dances, because in the first folio works of Shakespeare's, there are all these fabulous little cues that help the actors understand how they need to perform their roles. So we don't really need rehearsal so much. We also use an on-stage prompter. Our shows tend to be very fast-paced, really energetic, and we include lots of audience reaction as well. We ask them to cheer the heroes and boo the villains and sigh for the lovers. And it just gives it a very immediate organic feel, and tends to be quite improvisational as well, sticking with the text, but how it's going to come out, who knows.
Well, now in the past, when I've done interviews about OpsFest, it seemed like people didn't know, the actors didn't know exactly what role they were taking when they got there.
Well, we have that was in the first show that we do each season, the what we call our midsummer
before
Midsummer Night's Dream, that we start our season with. That particular show is where the actors have no idea what they're going to play. The audience actually ends up casting.
Oh no!
But for the rest of our shows, we try to cut people a little bit of a break, and folks do know what they're going to play.
Yeah,
so
it helps.
The only thing is with our. Yeah. With our text, we only have the words that we speak in a role and a few words before that are that's a cue. Other than that, we don't have the full text exactly the same way it was in Shakespeare's time, which is why we need the onstage prompter sometimes to help us navigate some of the tricky areas.
Well, now, OpsFest, you and I had talked briefly on email, but there are a lot of, you have a lot of diversity in your cast in OpsFest.
Yes, we do.
And it changes a lot of times, too, the casting, right, for different shows?
It does, shows? Absolutely. Yeah. We will never cast the same show the same way. So if you're coming to see us do Romeo and Juliet, which we are actually doing this coming Friday night over at Laurelhurst Park, if you were to come and see that and you saw it last year sometime, it will absolutely not have the same people playing the same roles. That's one of the things that we enjoy doing. We have about a little more than 60% of our company members are women. And in one of the things that we do that's a little different from Shakespeare's time is we give all of our actors the opportunity to decide whether they will play a role with the gender as written or if they care to play it with their own gender. And that's something that allows some very different things to happen on stage and to reconsider some relationships. Like in the Hamlet that we're doing on Saturday night coming up, our Hamlet and our Laertes are being played by women who are playing the roles with she, her pronouns, right?
Mm-hmm.
What's that going to be like? And I'm actually playing Polonius in that particular production, and I'm playing Polonius as written with the he, him pronoun, you know, which again is a really fun and something that makes a lot of the roles even more accessible for people, and sometimes more accessible for our audience to get a little better understanding of what some of the conflicts might be. We added Othello into our canon this year. We have 17 plays that we rotate, and my Othello, I'm playing with she, her pronouns as a woman, and it has definitely opened some stuff up that wasn't quite there before, but allows an audience to really get a sense of the big conflict that, say, you know, Desdemona's parents might have with this relationship happening. Anyway, it's fun.
Well, it is a lot of fun. And you also, you know, like Portland Actors Ensemble, you perform for free outdoors in various parks. And I'm just wondering, what are the challenges, especially now? Paul had spoken earlier about, you know, just being a little bit more aware of folks these days that, you know, might be stressed out. So I'm just wondering how it's been for you.
Sure. We actually have been having a great time out there. Some folks have been. You can feel some of the tension in the air, as it were. What we find is that we seem to be addressing it in what we're doing, and are of course aware of what's going on in the world. And I find that especially because we encourage the audience to respond to what they're seeing, I mean, even verbally, that seems to make a difference in our shows. It seems to make a difference when people can yell out at the actors on
the
stage.
Interactivity,
absolutely. Okay. The actors will sometimes respond right back to them, and fascinating things occur with that, all of which I think are extraordinarily positive. Another thing I also wanted to mention, just to be clear, that in our company, we're probably at about 20% of our company are people who are not white, and somewhere between 20% and 25% of our company are identify as LGBTQ, which is fun.
Okay.
As well.
Yeah. All good. Our Original Practice Shakespeare Festival runs through August 25th. See the schedule of shows at opsfest.org or stageandstudio.org or kbu.fm/stageandstudio. Jennifer, I want to bring in Asai Dean and Paul Suzy here into our conversation. And you three are breaking the traditional model of the white male artistic directors in Portland and nationally as well, which is also the model. I'm just wondering, just briefly, you know, how important do you three see diverse leadership in theater? You know, I just wanted to get your thoughts about that, Asai.
Yeah, I think it's...
Oh, besides the fact that it's crucial? Yeah.
Yeah, besides that, yeah.
Yeah, I think it's incredibly important. I mean, but it's incredibly important through every layer of the theater community. And, you know, so it's important in leadership, but it's also important in the scene shops. It's important in the boards. It's important in who's on the boards. And so I think it makes sense to focus on artistic directorship because that's visible, and on actors because they are so visible. But I think
behind the scenes as well.
If theater isn't having a strong representation of the people in the communities it's trying to serve, I don't think it can serve those communities nearly as well or really thrive in the way that I know I want to see this art form thrive.
How about you, Paul?
Oh. Yeah, I couldn't agree more. And I would also add that, you know, so much of this work is mission based. We do this for love, as Asai was saying as well. Like, and the I want theater to be the thing that I love, that is worthy of my love. And in order for that to be true, then we have to walk the walk and talk the talk. And beyond that, I don't personally have an ambition to be an artistic director. I just want to see good work happen. And so if there's any other mechanism for that to happen, I'm more than willing to step aside.
Yeah, it's about the work itself.
It's about the work.
And Jennifer, how do you feel?
Having artistic leadership that is not just a cisgender, straight white guy. I mean, yeah, that's pretty much the lens of theater. I mean, in conservatory coming up, I was told that anything that was a vision of mine, that came from my African-American, Native American, lesbian sensibilities, was suspect or not something that had any place in the theater, which I think is ludicrous. So yes, I think all of us coming in with an opening our theaters to those ways of walking through the world just means that we're making theater more accessible to everybody else, right?
Right.
Because that's what we want. I mean, that's why I love seeing Free Shakespeare out here, because it's the kids who were coming and just finished playing basketball on the courts below us who are going, yeah, I wonder what they're doing up there with the tents and stuff. What's up with that? And coming in and sitting down and enjoying what's happening. I mean, that's how theater continues to survive, is if we make sure that we are making it accessible for those guys too, you know.
And we only have like one minute, so maybe like a couple sentences about the importance of updating and changing Shakespeare. You know, what else would you like to see happen in Shakespeare?
I would like to see radical reinterpretations of these stories. I would like, we know how the story ends, how most of them end. So let's explode the box a little bit and let's investigate what is so important about these stories that we keep bringing them up.
Asai?
I want to see the scripts we look back to sort of expand beyond Shakespeare. I think Shakespeare's a great gateway drug, so to speak, to the canon of like classical theater and classical literature. But I would love to see more, you know, more Marlowe, more poetry from the period, more people, you know, taking on, you know, folklore and the works of
Christina Rossetti.
Yeah, and, you know, transforming those into pieces.
Okay, Jennifer?
Keep showing me how Shakespeare can still be relevant to me by showing me people who look like me and look like my friends and sound like us telling these stories so I can hear it with different ears.
Well, well put, all three of you. I think this has been an amazing conversation. Asai Dean of Salt and Sage Productions, Paul Suzy of Portland Actors Ensemble, and Jennifer Lanier of Original Practice Shakespeare Festival. Thank you for joining me on Stage and Studio today. You guys have been great. Thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you so much.
To find out more about OpsFest, Salt and Sage Productions, and Portland Actors Ensemble, visit stageandstudio.org or kbu.fm/stageandstudio. I have all the links and info. Check it out. And that's also where I'll have the podcast of the show online later today, as well as on iTunes. So don't forget to check me out on Facebook. Not me, but the show on facebook.com/stageandstudio. I guess you could check me out. And tweet me at Stage the Letter and Studio. That's it for Stage and Studio. My thanks to engineer Ray Bodwell. Till next time, I'm Dimae Roberts. We're going to go out with music, for actually the theme song from Romeo and Juliet, the film. So enjoy.